Gallery presenting live iPad painting and digital art by local artist Claire Irishenki. Iris will paint live to music of the Tim Randall's Quartet on this Saturday, the 23rd. All events start at 6. Learn more at blackfawnart.com. Stay tuned for Art Waves. Thanks for listening.
Thank you for spending your Tuesday afternoon, the 19th of September, with KHSU and with Art Waves. I'm Wendy Butler. I've got two interviews for you today. Later on the program, Ferndale Repertory Theater Artistic Producing Director Lyra Satloff speaks about the extensive remodel the theater has undergone. The 45-year Ferndale staple is beginning its new season on September 28th with a preview of its first show of the season, Little Shop of Horrors. First today, Arcata glass artist George Bouquet has his work in galleries around the world and in private collections ranging from Bill Gates to Bill and Hillary Clinton. His work is also in permanent collections from the U.S. Embassy to the National Liberty Museum in Philadelphia to the White House. He has developed his interests and techniques over the past 33 years of his work with cast glass. And he has just become a member of the Arcata Artisans Cooperative, where his work is featured this month. George Bouquet is in the studio along with Arcata Artisans board member and accomplished metalsmith, Betsy Roberts. George begins the interview by recalling how he got into glass.
Well, initially I was sort of a late bloomer. I didn't get involved with it till I was about 28 years old. And I went into a gallery that had pretty good representation of American glass at that time, might have been 1982. And I got really excited by what I saw. And initially I thought I would like to learn how to blow glass so I could make stemware, wine glasses. And I thought that that would be a good venture for me to get involved with. And so one thing led to another, and learning how to blow glass, it continued to evolve to where I never did make a goblet, and I ended up getting interested in cast glass. And over the years, that whole process, which is kind of unconventional for hot glass, evolved also to where the work you're most commonly know me for are the bowls with the fish in them, that kind of thing, some imagery, very simple forms. And those techniques evolved over, I'd say, 20 years, and it was quite a successful body of work. I enjoyed it a lot. And business grew to the point where I had 7 guys running around my studio, and it was just too much. So I put on the brakes and decided to make some changes more in the direction that I'm going now.
Well, we'll talk about that in a minute, but I want to go back. Had you always wanted to make art, some type of art, for a living?
No. When I was younger, I always made things. I did craft projects or whatever I felt like making. And then that desire to create went away more or less. I got distracted by other things in life, trying to make a living, getting out of the house, being on my own. But at a later time, I think when I was living in Mount Shasta, I started being creative again and got more interested in it and worked with making stained glass and sculpture, whatever I was moved to do. Then the light went on and I thought, well, you know, I could make a go of this possibly. And my confidence kind of grew. And I just followed that flow and it evolved into working in glass. Before that, in that span from high school until I was 28, I did many different things. I had a hot tub and spa business. I worked as a carpenter. I was a courier, whatever it took. But I didn't really find my passion or raison d'etre, whatever it is, until I was in my late 20s. And fortunately, things fell into place and all these doors opened. And I'd say a most significant one was going to Penland in North Carolina, Penland School of Crafts, where I was for 7 years. It's not a conventional school, but it was the right environment for me to learn.
Now, there are different ways that people approach talking about glass, blowing glass, casting glass. for people that aren't involved hands-on with crafting things out of glass or of glass or creating the glass object, explain what we're talking about here. Blowing is not, I've talked to other people about that. It's not actually blowing on the thing.
No, there are sort of different forms of working with glass. There's flat glass, like stained glass. There's slumping glass, where you take plate glass and you put it in an oven and heat it up until it bends to a form that you want. Then there's, some people call glass blowing, but technically it's lamp working. And that's what you see done mainly with Pyrex or sometimes what's called soft glass, where people are working on a torch in front of them on a bench. And they do blow. They blow bubbles and make all kinds of objects, but technically that's lamp working. Glass blowing traditionally has been when you have a glass furnace with a crucible in it full of molten glass, and you stick in a blowpipe and you gather the glass on it, and there you indeed shape it and form it and blow bubbles or make vases or can sculpt it as a solid and sculpt on the stick, as it were. What I do is hot cast glass, whereby it's more like a foundry technique. I've taken foundry techniques from pouring bronze or pouring iron and adapted them to glass casting. And I use different molds, sand molds, graphite molds, whatever it takes. Initially, when I moved to this area, I was casting glass, mainly making sculpture. But I started making dinnerware, just conventional, simple dinnerware with graphite molds, and did that for a few years and then sold that part of my business to Fire and Light when they started up, and they're still producing the work out of recycled glass. But I think for me, the main differentiation is that I'm pouring hot glass into a mold one way or the other. There's also kiln cast glass, where you have an open mold made out of refractory or plaster, and you put in either crushed glass or a big chunk of glass and heat it up in an oven until it melts in and takes the form of the mold. That's usually called warm glass.
And the two of you use fire then?
Fire is my friend, absolutely.
Yeah, that's what you have in common. Even though we've got glass here, you've got metal here, it's about fire.
I think that's an interesting thing to think about when you think about if we were ever to look back in art history and call the Humboldt School, what would be the common theme that runs through it? Well, I love metal. George loves glass. The woodworkers I know, they've got stacks of beautiful wood. They love wood. It seems to be a real joy of the material, and then just like George says, expedience, making it do what you want it to do. I have to make many of my own tools to get things to do what I want them to do. And again, George says his studio is specialized because sometimes you just got to start from scratch. And so I think that's a very common theme in Humboldt County artists in general.
And so you are on the board of directors of Arcata Artisans. And so the board of directors was reviewed basically George's application to be an artist member. Is that correct?
Well, it's even cooler than that. We have a special committee that just takes care of membership issues, scheduling and inviting new people and taking care of any problems or assigning duties, things like that. And they're the ones who interviewed and looked at George's work and then recommended it to the general membership as a whole, because a decision like that is major, because each person becomes an actual partner in the business at that point. So everybody has to, that has to go by it past everybody before the board of directors is more like, did we pay the bills this month? That sort of thing. What are we doing for Arts Arcata? You know, little things. So we have other committees too.
Betsy Roberts, board member of Arcata Artisans, which my second guest, cast glass artist George Bouquet, has just become a member. I'm Wendy Butler, and this is Art Waves on KHSU. And George, you were saying before we started recording this interview that, and I don't have an example of it in front of me, but that your work, you're making different type of glass art these days. It's still cast glass. You create the molds, but tell why and what you're doing
When I stopped the last body of work of the fish bowls and stuff like that, I had this idea to make these shell forms. I was really taken with the poetry of the forms and the beauty, the simplicity of them. And then I realized when I really sat down and I thought through what it was going to take to make these things, I had to reinvent the whole process in my studio. I had to come up with new sculpting materials, new mold techniques, new mold materials. I had to build equipment. I had to come up with a whole new glass formula. And then once I had the new glass formula, I had to reformulate all my opals so that they would work with those particular forms. And it was a really long, involved process. But I did put together a series of shells that I was real pleased with. There was a nautilus, another one called a voluta, and a simple shell form. And that, once that whole process was over, I sort of had a new vocabulary of techniques, I guess, a whole different way of creating forms and expressing them. And part of it, too, changed in the approach that I got involved in 3D rendering on the computer, where I could take the form, create the form on the computer, and edit it, change proportions, get it pretty much how I wanted it, and then I would print it on a 3D printer. And once I had that form, I could really see the nuances of it and come to terms with what I wanted. And I'd print that, and then I'd even cover that with clay to get the exact form I wanted. And that kind of became the pathway for what I'm doing now. Once I was done with the shell forms, which were very, very difficult to do, I started moving on to some figurative work, and that's what I'm doing now. I have a bust of a Buddha and another bust of a bodhisattva, and I'm doing a third bodhisattva. And that's really been liberating and quite fun. I've been enjoying that a lot. I've only sent them out to a few galleries, but they've been well received, and I feel encouraged.
Well, I see people when I'm staffing the gallery, I see people literally like put on the brakes, skid, practically trip, and turn around when they see the bodhisattvas in the window.
Oh, thank you.
The shells also are, very, very attractive to people, but the bodhisattvas, the renderings there are really nice.
The shells are quiet. They're subtle.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you did ask, do I have any glass making experience? I don't, but I did recently take a mold making workshop, which after I took that workshop and then I took a look at George's shells, I about swallowed my dentures, and I don't even have dentures, so that's how serious I went. What? How on earth can you make a mold of something? How many parts? There's so many undercut. It's so smooth. There's no bubbles. I mean, I was jumping up and down realizing the amount of technique that was going into it. And had I not taken mold making workshop, it was just a 2-day short little workshop. Yeah. That amount of appreciation makes me go, wow.
Well, welcome to my world. Yeah, there's nothing spontaneous about it.
Mm-mm.
You know, the hot aspect of it, of the melting of the glass and the actual pouring of the piece, is a very short process. In 2 minutes, I've poured the piece and it's in the oven. But leading up to that, I can have 200 hours in just making the mold and then making the sand molds and then the cold working.
The adage that we were taught, a beautiful mold is a useful mold. The more time you spend on your mold, the more happy you are at the end, and it's clear that's happened in this case.
I thought the adage was, well, if you're going to be dumb, you have to be tough.
Well, that might be a good one, too.
And you indeed, George, you've spent the last more than 3 decades, you've been able to work full-time as an artist.
Yes, I have. I feel really fortunate. You can be inspired all you want, you can make the work, but in the end, it has to be accepted and it has to sell because it is a business, you know, being an artist. And I feel really fortunate that that's worked out. Yeah, it's been 33 years.
You joined a cooperative gallery. Now, in this, there are ongoing meetings. And, of course, you see one another, artist members, quite often.
Mm-hmm.
You said something, I think, at the beginning of this interview about how you liked the idea of having other people come and view your work and comment to you about it.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
It can also be kind of scary if somebody comes up to you and says, criticizes, says, I don't really like this. And this is why, have you had, I mean, over these past three decades, have you had instructive criticism that has somehow affected your process? And
how of course.
Yeah,
of course there has been. And I've even invited it, especially from my peers. I have people that I've known that whole time who I have a lot of respect for that will be frank and not just praise, but be critical or say, oh, it doesn't really do anything for me, or, you know, you fell short on that, or the form is static. It's all helpful, and it's all things to be taken into consideration, but I still have to stay true to myself and do what I feel is right and stick with it, and hopefully it all works. Some pieces that I've made in series have worked, and some haven't. And I can't always figure that out. There's no rhyme or reason. You know, I can make a piece that I thought, well, this is fabulous. I mean, I feel moved. I feel like it's successful. And then it goes nowhere. And other ones that I thought, well, that's okay. You know, I'm happy with it. I'll put it out there. Have done real well and were staples for many years.
Now that you're part of this group, part of this cooperative, you're every month, even if you aren't featured necessarily on any given month, you're going to, especially by working there, you're going to see continuously people creating. And perhaps I'm thinking that another important thing about being part of a cooperative is that it inspires you to work, and to keep developing your own art.
Yeah, I would say that it does. And being able to see people's reactions to the work. You know, often the best feedback I can get is by people, how they react to it, not so much what they say. If they're responding to the beauty and it makes them stop, if there's a sense of appreciation just visually, maybe not even content, and they stop, it's a good thing. It's a good thing. So that is a nice thing to see on an ongoing basis, because isolated in the vacuum of the studio, you don't really know.
George Bouquet and Betsy Roberts, members of Arcata Artisans Cooperative. The gallery is located at 883 H Street in Arcata. Hours are Monday through Saturday, 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. and Sunday, noon to 4. Artist receptions are held every second Friday during Arts Arcata. The phone number is 825-9133, and the website is arcataartisans.com. I'm Wendy Butler, and you're listening to Art Waves on KHSU. Ferndale Repertory Theater began as Ferndale Little Theater in 1972, and it's housed in the Hart Theater Building, built in 1920. The FRT is undergoing a remodel, including the reduction and reconfiguration of its seats. FRT Artistic Producing Director Lyra Satloff is here with more about that, but we begin with a question that is not surprising. How is this community theater funded?
We are very, very lucky at Ferndale Repertory Theater because we have a board that really focuses on fundraising. And work very, very hard to make sure that we have the resources that we need. So for us, it's a combination of what's called the gate, that's ticket sales, and donations, and grant funding. So we get a goodly amount of local grant funding, and local funders have been very generous and very supportive of us. We have good partners in the community. And it is easier to get granting organizations to support specific projects or equipment or that sort of thing. It's harder to get grant monies to support your day-to-day operations, right? What they want to do is help to enhance what they know to be a healthy company, right? So you kind of have to be a healthy company in the first place to be successful at your grant writing. And we are that. I didn't bring those numbers with me because I wasn't anticipating that question, but I think right now about 40% of our income comes from ticket sales. And that's sometimes surprising to people to hear that that number is so low. And then another 40% comes from fundraising. So for every dollar that you spend in on a ticket, my board spends energy to raise another dollar, one-to-one for those. And then the rest comes from grants for various projects or pieces of equipment or so on.
Now, you said that you get a local, you require local grants as well as national or international grants? Or
no, we don't get national or international grants, although I'm working with an organization called the Humboldt Creative Alliance now, which is an interesting new group, which is working to advocate for a particular placement in the economic development world of Humboldt County so that we might be able in the future to get federal grants. I would think that Ferndale Repertory Theater would not necessarily be looking directly toward those kinds of things. Those might be for organizations more like the Playhouse, which has a very robust in the schools program, the Arcata Playhouse, I mean, or Ink People or Del Arte or, you know, whatever. But we're all kind of working together to get ourselves poised for that. In Ferndale, we are very lucky because there are some foundations in the area that have been very supportive of us and for a long, long time.
Does that include Humboldt Area Foundation?
Well, specific organizations through Humboldt Area Foundation, yes.
Right.
And a little bit here and there from Humboldt Area Foundation. They've helped us with what is called a TAP grant, which are fantastic little grants to help nonprofit organizations do planning, strategic planning and board development and that sort of thing. So we've gotten one of those. The McLean Foundation has been incredibly supportive of us. The Lytle Foundation has been supportive of us over time. And then we do receive monies from a foundation which is actually in Manhattan, the Feuerman Foundation. And we have that support because there is a person who lives in Ferndale, who is related to a person who directs that foundation. And so because there's that interest there, the foundation has taken an interest in us, which is lovely.
And when we're talking about the grant funding, you mentioned a couple months ago about day-to-day operations versus special projects.
Yeah.
The grant money that you get is not based on special projects necessarily.
Well, for example, okay, we have just done a giant remodel. Well, actually, just finishing, rushing as we get toward the opening of Little House of Little Shop of Horrors, which previews on September 28th. We are rushing to finish a big remodel of the building, which includes new paint, new carpet, new seats, an expanded lobby, an expanded lighting loft, an expanded sound booth. We've completely redone our concessions area. We've added a kegerator, so we'll be able to serve local beers and cider on tap. It's been really quite a big project, and I think that patrons are going to be very excited when they come in and see it. Really looks quite beautiful. It's much more comfortable to be in. And that was largely paid for by grants that we applied for and were lucky enough to be successful in receiving.
Yeah, because what we're talking about is a remodel rather than just keeping the lights on.
Right. Keeping the lights on, those monies come from ticket sales. They come from Rep Fest, which is an annual gala that my board produces. They come from individual donations. You know, we're very lucky. People are supportive of us. And I'm really hoping that this remodel reinvigorates that, because while we've been able to get these grant monies for this remodel, it means that we're not applying those grant monies to other projects that we might otherwise have asked for funding for, like our youth program or those kinds of things. So we're really counting on patrons this year to show their appreciation by making a donation.
Now, did you mention, or is this before we started recording, about that the seats are reduced slightly now?
The number of seats, right. Yeah. So we used to have 248 seats in our house, and we now have 184. So
why did you choose to reduce the numbers of seats?
Well, in part to give a little more room and to put more comfortable seats in, and in part because we don't sell out every performance, and I felt like it was worthwhile taking a few seats away to make the experience of those who are coming more regularly more pleasant. So the expanded concessions offerings and the expanded lobby, you know, and nicer seats and bigger seats to sit in certainly enhance the theatrical experience.
And it also leaves more room for live orchestra.
There is a little tiny bit more room for a band, yes.
I was just thinking, because I've seen live, you know, orchestra at Ferndale Rep.
And we do occasionally have small bands, small live bands. Well, not occasionally. We often have small live bands, and sometimes they are in front of the stage rather than somewhere hidden on stage or backstage, yeah.
Right. Yeah, and so... the new season begins on September.
Right, yes. Well, while we're doing all of this remodeling, the cast and production team of Little Shop of Horrors have been working very hard since the last week of July, and they will move into the theater on Monday, so we're hurrying to get done and out of their way. And that show previews on Thursday, September 28th. There's a quite affordable preview performance, and then it opens on the 29th, and it runs for 5 weekends.
Previewing some of the new season.
Sure.
What else?
We're very excited about this season. So after Little Shop of Horrors in late November, we'll be opening Madeline's Christmas and running that with our special Saturday matinees. So we have Saturday and Sunday matinees for this family holiday kind of show that means more people can come and bring their families. After that, we'll be doing Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf, the incredible Edward Albee play. And we'll be doing that as we have been the last couple of years as a partnership with the Arcata Playhouse. So it will open in late January and play 2 weekends in Ferndale, and then it'll move up to the Playhouse in February and play 2 weekends in February at the Arcata Playhouse. That will be followed by I don't really know what to call this. I want to call it a revival production of Nonsense, because I directed a production of Nonsense there almost 30 years ago. And we have 3 of the 5 cast members who were in that original production, Bonnie Halverson, Julie Engels, and Terry Desch, who were all in that original production that I directed so many years ago. They are going to be in it again. And then we have 2 new members of the cast, and I'm really excited about And I'm directing that one, so that'll be fun. And then we're closing the season with Chicago, which opens the first weekend of May and runs through the first weekend of June.
Lyra Satloff, Artistic Producing Director for Ferndale Repertory Theater. Again, Little Shop of Horrors begins with a preview on Thursday, September 28th at 8 p.m. It will run weekends through October 29th. It's appropriate for ages 16 and older. For reservations and information, you can phone 786-5483, or you can visit ferndalerep.org. That's it for the program today. Join me next Tuesday at 1:30 p.m. for Art Waves, produced for KHSU at Humboldt State University. You can also listen to live and archived programs at khsu.org. And you can download a podcast of Art Waves at iTunes. I'm Wendy Butler, the show's producer, engineer, and host. Until next time, thanks for listening.
Some people are on the cutting edge, looking forward, keeping the music moving and changing. But others keep up what Jessica Williams called the House of Jazz, the tradition of the masters like Charlie Parker. Listen to the classic styles of modern jazz on Gone Sides with me, Darius Brotman. Tuesday nights from 8 to 10 here on KHSU, your jazz station.
This is
Radio Lab.
And that's
Radio
the moment.
It's happened very sudden.
So that's how it happened.
Suddenly, in a flash.
Everything is totally changed.
Amazing.
Hit us for the first time.
Where?
Where exactly?
You see it happen.
Struck me at that moment.
Are you really going to go all the way there?
Tuesday evening at 7 on KHSU.
for Black people, you become exhausted with trying to be accepted for who you are, and then seeing when a white person or a person with privilege or power does those things or mirrors your image and then is glorified, and now that is validated. And yet, even in that system, even as that is happening, you're still not valid. You know, it's a constant fight. And I think that that's why oppressed people hold on to their traditions and their customs and